Today's episode of The Razor Show is brought to you by Robinhood. With Robinhood, you can invest in stocks, options, and ETFs right from your phone. You can even spend and earn interest on uninvested cash. In the fractional shares, you can buy stocks in any amount, including companies like Apple, Amazon, Tesla, for as little as $1. And that's with no commission fees or account minimums. So whether you're new to investing and ready to learn, or just looking for a better experience, stop waiting and join the 10 million Robinhood users. Listeners can get started with the free stock by going to razorshow.robinhood.com. That's razorshow.robinhood.com. All investments involve risk. This is not an investment advice, a recommendation, or solicitation of any security. Other fees may apply. Visit rbnhd.co/fees. The free stock program is subject to certain limitations. Annual percentage yield, APY, or uninvested cash is paid by program banks and is variable. Robinhood Financial is not a bank.
Welcome to The Razor Show with the Athletics' Nick Underhill and Jeff Howe, plus three-time Super Bowl champion Matt Chatham.
What's up, everybody? This is The Razor Show, Jeff and Nick, midweek edition, and we are coming at you with our first show of the offseason, which was certainly not planned. I can't say it wasn't unexpected, given the way the Patriots went into that game against the Titans, which was ultimately a loss. I think my standing opinion going into that was they were either going to win by four touchdowns or they were going to lose a close one, and of course they lost a close one. And I think that's what we saw, was the Patriots bowing out early, but that was the team that they were. The reason they lost was due to a lot of the mistakes that they were making throughout the season. And while I will stand by my opinion, which I'm sure Nick will agree with, that I was shocked that they lost to the Dolphins, I can't say that I was shocked they lost to the Titans after what we saw just 6 days earlier against the Dolphins. So we don't want to spend too much of the show looking back, but I want to give Nick a chance to just follow up on anything that he has left over from those Saturday night impressions.
I think they died exactly as how they lived. And, you know, I think probably one of my biggest regrets of covering this team is that I honestly don't think that maybe we made a big enough deal about some of the issues we were seeing. And, you know, we preach patience and let's see what happens. Let's see if they turn over this leaf. Well, also voicing some, you know, caution. But I think if it was any other team, and I've said this a few times before, if it was any other team, I think that their issues would have been more magnified and amplified, and nobody probably would have really taken them seriously as a contender. But I mean, they have earned that benefit of doubt, so not a huge regret. It's just, I kind of wish I would have heeded the warning signs that, you know, I pointed out a couple times a little bit more seriously than we did. But, you know, I don't think they're that far off even still, even as bad as the offense looked. And, you know, there's some key players that are probably going to leave in free agency, but I still think if they keep Tom Brady and, you know, make a few tweaks, they can be right back in it next year. So, you know, the team disappointed a little bit, just given, you know, that they were the Super Bowl champions. But, you know, in the end, the way this team was built and some of the moves they made throughout the year, you know, the inability to add talent, Josh Gordon not working out, all that stuff, I think they kind of did exactly what they probably should have done with their talent level.
Yeah, and I was talking to somebody well-informed with the way the Patriots handle a lot of things, and just the other day, and they said that this the team that lost was the team that they were, and they didn't underachieve. That was the fate that they basically deserved. And I mean, again, I don't think that's too dissimilar from what we have already discussed. I also don't think you should be as hard on yourself about not heeding those warnings, because that was something we discussed a lot this season. I mean, we mentioned the term blind faith quite a bit, in that the Patriots would probably be able to turn it around. Now, ultimately, they haven't been able to, but that's something that they've done over and over again. But it's not like we whistled past the graveyard with a lot of the issues. I mean, the run defense was a problem at times throughout the season. The offensive line was a problem earlier in the season, although I don't think the offensive line was too bad. I kind of want to back up a little bit there. They got crushed on that goal line stand, or when they had first and goal from the one. I mean, there was three consecutive pressures up the middle, and Isaiah Wynn got run over on one of those plays as well. So the offensive line, by and large, had a decent game against the Titans, but in the most pivotal stretch of the game, they got kind of run through. And Brady and the chemistry or execution with the receivers just wasn't there consistently enough. So these are things that we pointed out, but I don't think we were wrong to think or assume or give them the benefit of the doubt or to hold the blind faith that some of this stuff would work itself out.
Well, it might have felt like, you know, at the end of the season, I do like the evaluation of the players. And like, if I'm going to bash Marcus Cannon for missing a couple blocks, like, I'm going to bash myself for like the few times where I felt like maybe like, oh my God, this team isn't going to do anything. And like, you know, you couch it a little bit, you know, it's just holding myself a little bit accountable. I think we covered the team extremely fairly. Both of us, the stuff we talked about, I think we pointed out all the issues. It's just, you know, a little behind the scenes here. Like, we were doing the predictions for 2020 and one of them was like, you know, they aren't going to win the Super Bowl. Like, I started writing that, and I even wrote in like a thing that I ultimately didn't publish that I didn't think they were going to win a playoff game. And then I was like, I'm not going to die on this hill because they'll probably somehow find a way to come back to life and do something, and I'm going to look really stupid. And it's just little things like that where it's like you kind of see some stuff, but you're like, it's the Patriots, so I'm going to give them a chance. But look, like I said, like, of any team in any sport anywhere in the world, like, if you're going to give a team like a chance to figure it out in the playoffs on the fly, it's this team, because last year they actually kind of did that a little bit. So yeah, Shireen's trying to get into the podcast here, but you know, just in the terms of accountability, like, you know, I look at all the players, I look at myself, like, that's just the one thing I wish I would have done just a little bit differently, is at one point just been like, hey, I don't think they're good enough. But you know, what are you going to do?
I mean, there's one point in there that I do want to hit on, and that, yes, we are amazing. That's it. I'll echo that. I got a question for you. I got a couple things that I have not prepped Nick for whatsoever in this show, in the extensive pre-show prep work that I did on my own here this morning. Very extensive as any prep work I've ever done. I gave it like 14 seconds of thought. One of them I want to ask, and actually this wasn't prep, this was something I just thought of. We've seen this question on, I'd say more so on Twitter than anything, but Nick is better equipped to answer it than probably anybody. How is, with the criticism or the microscope on Tom Brady for A, his performance, and B, his contract situation, how is that similar or different from the things that Drew Brees has dealt with in New Orleans, or not dealt with?
You mean in terms of like how people talk about it?
Yes. Media, so, fans, whoever.
Oh my God. Like, the Brees thing in New Orleans has been a nonstop talking point, I would say probably for the better part of three seasons. You know, probably more so amongst the fan base than the media. I think the media covers it pretty extensively. You know, it's a thing that kind of happens every year now. And he's been on this Brady contract for a while. And, you know, I think the fan base has been preparing for his end for a very long time. And it's not about like a negativity thing, but there is like always this sense of concern. And then there's also like an element of like, make sure you're aware of this to appreciate that one of the better quarterbacks of all time, you know, I probably put him in that top 15 list, top 10 list, yeah. You know, it is potentially going to be, you know, entering the end of his career. Every year could be his last season. I do think that there's probably more of a sense of, and this will probably bite me in the ass, but there's probably a greater sense of confidence that he'll be back probably this year. I think if, you know, Bree says he wants to play football, they're going to welcome him back with open arms. He just completed 75% of his passes, and well, that playoff game wasn't great for him. I still think that they could probably win a Super Bowl with him if everything goes right. So if he wants to come back, I think he comes back automatically. I think the Brady thing is probably a little more uncertain. Just, you know, right now everybody's kind of looking at it like with a little bit more caution. But yeah, that's definitely a huge difference. Like, people here seem to get kind of upset when you mention that Brady could be ending his career, that last game could be his last game. And I don't think it was even like a sense of negativity. I think some people, I don't believe we wrote anything, but some other people, you know, wrote some stuff just kind of like, hey, like, this could be the last game. Like, this thing is happening, you know, take a second and realize that, you know, this is a possible end of the Tom Brady era in New England. And like, that was it. And it seemed like there was some backlash to that, which kind of caught me a little bit by surprise.
was your dog agreeing or disagreeing with your take there?
It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell. She's a hard critic.
All right. So I got another leading, building off of that. I figure I've heard you're a big fan of role play.
What?
I swallowed a bug. So let's play out Brady and the Patriots in the upcoming negotiations. Do you want to be Brady or do you want to be the Patriots?
I will do whatever you want.
All right. I'll be Brady.
Who do you want to be?
I'll be Brady. You be Bill Belichick. Or, you know what, just the collective Patriots brain trust. And if you have to, this is already too weird. Anyway, all right, Patriots, I want 2 years, $50 million, and guarantee 40 of that.
No way you're going to be 43 years old. It's year to year. We will give you 22.
How much are you guaranteeing?
We'll guarantee it for a year. We'll go year to year on this. You want to keep playing, we'll guarantee every year. Not going to pay you top of the market. Your performance this year wasn't good enough. You didn't elevate all the players around you. The rookie didn't develop. The wide receiver you asked for had one good game and then fell off the map. We're going to need to, you know, see the water rise. And while you weren't to blame for all that stuff, you barely completed 60% of your passes, and there's possible signs of wear and tear. So we'll pay you fairly. We'll guarantee it, but we are not doing a multi-year deal.
Well, now I know why I have an agent, because you just hurt my feelings.
Hey, I'm just keeping it, you know, kind of keeping it. Like, if you're negotiating, there are things to come down on him about. And like, personally, I don't know how much of the blame he deserves for Harry, you know, not getting all the way going. Harry missed time, you know. And I hate to even bring this up because I thought it was the stupidest thing in the world. But like, you go back to the beginning of the season and him not going to OTAs now, and it's like, okay, these guys didn't get going and you weren't there. Like, it kind of looks bad. Like, has he earned the right not to come? Yeah, absolutely. And I don't necessarily hold that all the way against him. But when there are players that need to develop and then you get to January and those guys still look lost, you know, it hurts. And the IR thing plays into that as well. But, you know, it's just, you know, some of the stuff going on, there is some blame to place on him. I don't think he should be totally free of blame for the 2019 season and how it went. Like, is a lot of that due to not having the best players in the world around them? Yeah, 100%. But like, at the same time, you got to put some of that on him, because there were little ways where he could have done a little bit more and he chose not to do those things. And, you know, I'm going to hold him accountable for that regardless of how many rings he has. And I don't think that's being mean or bashing him. It's just the truth at this point.
All right. Well, with all that on the table, would you give me a 2-year deal worth 40 base up to 50 with incentives, and you'll guarantee $10 million of my salary in 2021?
Yeah, I'd do that. I think that's a reasonable compromise. I mean, if he wants 2 years, and look, I mean, let's say they move on from him, right? Like, is Jarrett Stidham ready? If the answer is no, and you got to bring somebody else in, like, who are you bringing in? Like Ryan Tannehill, Teddy Bridgewater? Like, what's the point of doing that? Like, you're going to have to sign those guys to multi-year deals. You're going to have to pay them a lot of money. You're going to be starting from scratch, and it's going to be a short-term thing. So if you have to have somebody here, if Brady's willing to move off of, like, fully guaranteed 2 years, it's, you know, guaranteed 1 year. And then the next year, let's say he decides to retire and you're left with 10 in dead money. Like, that's not a huge deal. You can figure that out. It's not going to hurt your cap too bad. And you kind of just move on. But like, if you need a bridge, if you're like, okay, Stidham can get there, or if you're like, we need to draft somebody and find out, you know, basically if Stidham isn't 100% ready today to take over in 2020, like, signing somebody else and moving on from Brady makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, I agree with that completely, and that's the biggest unknown, I think, going into this offseason. It's not just what will happen with Brady. It's what does Bill Belichick truly think of Jarrett Stidham? And we can sit here and write all the nice things in the world about him, and we can cite all the quotes in public, but Belichick either believes that Jarrett Stidham is franchise quarterback ready in 2020, or he doesn't. And if he does believe that, then he has all the leverage in the world of playing hardball with Tom Brady. And if he doesn't believe that, then the hardball can only go to a certain extent. And then you have to worry, or at least consider the element of pissing Brady off to the extent where he goes into free agency and finds a tremendous deal elsewhere. Because if, let's say the Patriots offer him 1-20, and that's it. And it's because, and let's say Belichick is not totally sure that Jarrett Stidham's the guy, and Brady goes and leaves. Then the names you mentioned, whether it's Bridgewater or, I mean, shoot, let's say he finds a, let's say Brady goes to Tennessee and your next option is like Ryan Tannehill, whatever. You're going to have to pay like $20 million annually for a free agent quarterback to come in, and you're not going to be totally sold on that guy either. So it's either, in my opinion, Stidham or bust. And I think, at least in terms of making the money work. And then the other idea, which I hate with a caveat, I think the world of Tua Tagovailoa. And I've admired his game since the night he stepped into the national championship, the first time I had ever even heard of him, and won that game against Georgia. But if he falls to you at 23, or even if he falls to the late teens to a point where you can trade up for him, the only reason that happens is because the medical check on the hip is a total mess. So then you're staking your first round pick on a guy that you have no idea how long he's going to be able to play or how effective he's going to be. Because if that hip checks out medically at the combine, or at least at some point between the combine and the draft in April, that means he's going to be a top five or at worst a top 10 pick. So you're either way out of reach for Tua, or the reason why you have a chance for him is because he's a total wild card medically. And what has happened to some of the guys that you've taken a chance on with some of those medical wild cards of late? Dominique Easley was a total bust. Sony Michel has had knee issues. The jury's still somewhat out on him. Isaiah Wynn, the jury's out on him as well. Derek Rivers was not a medical wild card, but a guy who was jumping up basically two levels of football and has been hurt in two of his three seasons. So you just don't want to... I mean, I think Cyrus Jones also had a knee issue earlier in his high school career, but at least came out with some question marks. And again, you can debate whether or not the medical issues were the reasons for their failure, or at least the ambiguity for their future in the NFL and their success and whatever it may be. But that's a scary proposition to make. So, all right, all that said...
While you're talking about Tua, let me throw a hypothetical out there. Like, what percentage health would you need to take that gamble? Like, odds of recovery?
I think if it's a 75% chance that he's going to fully recover, he's a top 10 pick.
It's a little weird for me. I think this year I would need good odds as the Patriots, because I think there are some things they need to do, and they need to hit on some of those early picks. I think, like, coming into this year, where I thought the team was better, and obviously, you know, they needed help this year too, and that was wrong. But like, the perception was that they were set up pretty well coming into the season. I think I would have did like 60-40 in this previous draft. But yeah, this one upcoming, I think probably 70-75 is probably the area where you need to be. But also, my other thing into that too is, like, is Brady gone? If Brady's gone, then like, maybe you take a wild risk and hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it all comes back to whether or not Belichick firmly believes in Stidham. And that's why you talk about leverage. So let's take it a step further with these negotiations. Let's say Brady hits free agency. If Brady hits free agency, it's because he's pissed off with the way negotiations have gone. And he finds a rock-solid deal. And let's just... You know what? He's not going to go to the Colts because they tried to destroy his career his reputation with Deflategate. Let's say, I mean, he's probably not going to go to Tampa or Miami unless they come at him with a 2-year, $80 million contract with like $60 million of that guaranteed. I know that's monopoly money. It sounds absurd that a quarterback at 43 and then 44 would get a contract like that, but those two teams have $88 to $98 million in cap space and can absolutely do something like that. I don't think Brady's taking on a rebuild regardless of the money. I don't think he's going to go out with a money grab. That's my read. Just to try to build up a program for a couple years and then ride off into the sunset in a wild card round in another uniform. I think that's crazy. In my opinion, the only one that really makes sense for him is Tennessee. And I think it's because you've got an elite offensive line, you've got some really promising or a lot of potential with the skill positions, young guys. You've got a defense that's growing, and then you've got one of your best friends in the world as the head coach. So if there's a chance, and Tennessee has almost exactly the same kind of cap space situation as the Patriots. The Patriots have a projected $49 million. The Titans have a projected $48 million. So if Brady is going to leave and he's going to say, you know what, I want to give this a shot. I don't know how the next 2 years are going to go, but at least I'm going to do it with one of my best friends in Mike Vrabel. And, you know, that seems really appealing to me. So let's say Brady goes to Tennessee in free agency and says and gets the whole Peyton Manning tour and all this other stuff, and the Titans offer him 2 years and $60 million fully guaranteed. Then the Patriots have a legitimate question or debate on their hands. And like, I don't think they're going to have to match 2 and 60, but if it comes down to it and Belichick is not fully committed to the idea of Stidham taking over in 2020, then you have to say, do you at least try to give him 2 and 50 and guarantee enough money in 2021 to make that work? And that's, in my opinion, the most fascinating part of all of this, if that's how it plays out.
Yeah, that's 100%, you know, it's very hard to answer that because it all at that point, it all rides on Stidham and maybe what you think you can get in free agency. And like I said, I don't see that path in free agency. If Tennessee's moving on from Tannegoat, like, you know, like that kind of tells you something that at that point too. So like that isn't your guy probably. Like, if it gets to that point and you don't believe in Stidham and somebody is forcing you into the hard corner, then, yeah, maybe you do kind of make a competitive offer. And, if you don't believe in Stidham at all, if you think, like, there's no way we're screwed, we're 7-9 if this guy's playing quarterback, maybe at that point you up that 2021 guaranteed money before you can even talk to another team and kind of protect your neck a little bit that way. But you know, that's the big question mark. It seems like everybody's positive about Stidham, but at the same time, if this guy was in practice, you know, killing all the worms and looking terrible, like nobody's going to stand there and tell us in the locker room, like, this guy sucks. Like, they're going to be like, oh yeah, he's great. He looks awesome. He's doing this. He's doing that. So it's really hard for us to know the truth on that situation. But if you don't think he's the guy, I think you probably do. Like, you know, you got to swallow it a little bit and maybe cater to him a small degree. You know, I understand the hard stance at this point, given his age and, you know, the fact that his performance can go down, you know, very quickly. But if you believe in him for 2020 and you get caught on the hook a little bit for 2021, it's not the end of the world. So if there isn't a contingency plan, if you don't think you can get a Matt Castle type season, like, yeah, then I think you probably do got to be a little bit proactive here.
So I, for what it's worth, and I don't know if it's worth a whole lot or not, because ultimately, again, the opinion that matters is Bill Belichick's, but Jarrett Stidham, and I wrote this and I said it in the summer and I stand by it. Jarrett Stidham was the best rookie quarterback I've seen in my time covering the Patriots, and it really wasn't even close. Jimmy Garoppolo was a mess for a good chunk of 2014. He turned it around once the preseason started, but that was like 2 weeks of practice that we got to see him actually perform at a functional level. Now, he was never a great practice player to begin with. Took that preseason game, I think against the Redskins, to get him going. Matt Castle was never good at practice, or at least in training camps that I saw. And I know he sort of arrived, he definitely arrived in New England before I was covering the team full time, but I saw some of that 2008 training camp just when I was down there on a part-time basis, and he couldn't get out of his own way. So it's, you know, I think there's a lot to like about what Stidham could bring the Patriots. It's just, there is often that disparity of how does a player practice versus how does he play in games. And, you know, what does the team think of him? And we've heard all the right things, but I think more than anything, that accuracy pops. The way that he can fit balls into tight spaces and making all the throws. I mean, just some of those training camp performances were otherworldly. Just in terms of the throws that he would make. I mean, he would roll to his... I remember he was rolling to his left, and it looked like he was throwing a ball through the end zone. And it would help better if I could remember who the receiver was. But there was like a great catch in the back in the end zone on the left side of the field. Then there was another play. It was either like a play or two before or after when he hit James White in the right corner of the end zone on a wheel route. And that was a well-covered play, but, I mean, again, he threw a dime. And these weren't just like, this wasn't like a one-off situation where it was like one throw per practice. Stidham had a lot more good days than bad days, and he made some of those throws consistently in team drills that made you just say, wow, like this kid has legitimate potential.
I mean, he would have been a top 10 pick if he had come out a year earlier. I mean, that last year, his line kind of fell apart at Auburn. He probably lost a little bit of confidence due to the circumstances surrounding him. And, you know, things kind of went off the rails a little bit. But it seems like he looked like, you know, the guy that everybody was hyping up early on during his collegiate career throughout training camp in the preseason. And, you know, I agree with you totally. I was extremely impressed by how poised he looked in, you know, just the accuracy and all those things, and especially because those are the knocks on him that, you know, he lacked poise, escaped the pocket too quick, all those things. And, you know, it wasn't perfect by any means, but he was significantly better than I think, you know, the tape that he put out his final year at Auburn. So, I mean, there are reasons to be, you know, optimistic about him. It's just, you know, it's just not proven in, you know, a truly competitive environment. And until you see that, there's going to be some discomfort with it. But, you know, as far as, you know, the preseason training camp, I think he did all the things pretty close to how you would have scripted it out, you know, in an ideal scenario. The second week of the playoffs is upon us. The bad news is that there's only a few more weeks left in the football season. But the good news is you can still get your fantasy fix with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. And if you've never played before, that's even more to celebrate. You can play for a $1 million top prize this weekend. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at the $1 million top prize. Plus, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some serious extra cash to play with throughout the playoffs. With only the best football teams left, there's no better time to be playing. Download the DraftKings app now and use the code RUN. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus of up to $500 on your next deposit. Remember, that's code RUN, R-U-N, and you can get a deposit bonus of up to $500 only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
You got any other free agents that you're really keeping an eye on here? I mean, I know the two big ones are Van Noy and Tooney. There are some other good ones with McCourty, Jamie Collins. Any situations that really have your eye?
I think the McCourty one's probably a big one, but I think if he's going to play, I'm just guessing here, but I feel like it's probably a situation where he says, hey, I want to come back, and they figure it out. I kind of feel like, you know, the first two guys you said are most likely probably gone. They can probably find more money elsewhere. You know, they invested so much in Shaq Mason. Are they going to spend even more on the interior? You know, I don't know. They got the rookie up Froholt. You know, maybe they see something there as a possible replacement. I don't know. I mean, if Brady's coming back, you know, you invest more on the line to build the infrastructure around him to, you know, negate some of that mobility that caused him to have issues with pressure. But it didn't feel like they were super interested in giving him that infrastructure this year. So, like, why would they suddenly change course and drop all this money on that position, especially when you have the offensive line coach that you have? The Jamie Collins one is probably the most intriguing to me, just because I felt like for 6 or 7 weeks he was absolutely incredible, and then, you know, the last 7, 8, 9 weeks of the season he was just okay. You know, there were good moments, but it felt a lot more silent from him as the year went on. So I don't know if he's going to have the huge money deal that it looked like he was probably going to get once this season ended, you know. So just in terms of overall, even if it's not here, I'm just curious to see, you know, how other people see him and how that turns out in, you know, terms of dollars.
Yeah, I feel pretty confidently, just an educated guess more than anything, that Jamie Collins will return. I don't know why the 2-year $12 million number keeps popping into my head. Like, I feel like that's a good deal for him and the team. And as always, teams are going to look at what happened when he left for a while, and that's going to hurt his value. And he was kind of silent. And whether it's on him or the Browns operation as a whole, he was kind of silent in his 2 years in Cleveland. So he got that big money deal. And I think that all honestly could even help him, could help sway his decision to remain in New England, because he got paid. And now he has a chance to kind of finish his career with Dante Hightower, who's one of his best friends. And I think the Patriots are going to look at this and say, all right, Kyle Van Noy's gone. You can pretty much write that one off. I mean, he's going to get, I wouldn't be shocked if he got a 5-year, $75 million deal, because that's what pass rushers get in these types of markets. And the Patriots are going to say, do you want, like Trey Flowers a year ago, like if there was ever anybody who was worth breaking the bank for, it was Trey Flowers. Just an outstanding player on the field, as good of a person, a leader, and a performer as you could get behind the scenes. And they weren't going to touch that 5-year, $90 million number. Not that I blame them, but you look at the amount of money that they turned, you know, that Flowers deal into, and you kind of make a comparable thing with Van Noy. And you say, do you want Van Noy, or do you want to keep McCourty, Collins, Alandon Roberts, and, you know, a couple other guys? And then I think with Tooney, so Shaq Mason got a 5-year deal worth up to $50 million. They restructured his contract to save some cap space this year, right around the Sanu deal and the Sanu trade. And that basically meant that locked in Shaq Mason for 2020. Now, he dealt with some injuries and all that other stuff, but if you cut Shaq Mason next year, you would incur an extra $6.5 million in cap penalties. So that's not happening, quite frankly. So then you look at Tooney and you say, is he going to get a 5-year, $50 million deal? No, it's probably going to be north of that. He might get 5 years and 60. And it's just, you can't invest over $100 million in total value in two guards. But if you're the Patriots, if Tom Brady's gone, does that entice you to try to protect Stidham? Because you have the extra money now, because you have a quarterback on a rookie deal. And if it does, I think maybe this will be the last topic we hit on. The offensive line situation is fascinating to me, because I don't know. I mean, we can assume Isaiah Wynn is going to stay at left tackle. But if and when, or when they lose Joe Tooney, do you think about moving Isaiah Wynn inside to left guard? Or, based off of Marcus Cannon, who gave up, I think it was 41 disruptions this year, which was an extremely high total, much more than he had given up in any year since 2016, or I guess you'd have to go back to 15 when he had a very difficult year. Are you looking at Cannon and saying you want to move on because you can save $3.8 million in cap space? And if that's the case, do you want to move Isaiah Wynn to right tackle? And in either one of those situations, what are you going to do at left tackle? And are you going to use your first round pick on a left tackle? And if you do, are you confident in the draft? Or do you say Yodney Cajuste could play right tackle and Wynn could go to left guard or stay at left tackle? Whatever. I mean, what we saw in Froholt in the preseason was a guy who was much rawer than was even advertised. 4 holding penalties in 3 games. He really did not. I think asking him to be your starting left guard would be overly ambitious right now. So there's a lot in play there. Now, you can draft and develop a guard in a middle round like they did with Tooney and Mason and have some success, but there's a lot going on there. So I figure we'll finish on the offensive line and what you think they might do, or if you think I'm overblowing a potential topic of a positional change.
No, I think that's fair. The offensive line was surprisingly shaky to me. Just considering it was kind of viewed as, you know, one of the strengths of the team, and it was shaky the whole entire year. Now, obviously, you had injuries and things of that nature, and you know, like you said, the Cannon step back was unexpected. Wynn, I don't think, was as good as we all kind of thought he was going to be. I don't think he was bad, but just the level of expectation, I don't think met the output. So, yeah, I mean, I could see him definitely moving around a little bit. I could see them moving on from Cannon, too. I think you got to have your eyes open at least to see if there's another way to move forward and possibly get better. And then, you know, the final thing on this that I think could be, you know, something to keep an eye on, and it just seems like that there's been a little bit of talk out there in his comments about, you know, being tied to Josh McDaniels to a certain degree, you know, as far as coming back to coach, is, you know, is Dante Scarnecchia back? I think, you know, at this point, it's fair to wonder every year if he's going to come back for another year. And if he doesn't come back, like, what's the overall impact on the line? And then does that change how you feel like you have to invest in that position because you don't have this wizard who can kind of, you know, coach just about anybody up to the height of their potential? I just don't think that, you know, everybody's capable of getting the same level of output that this guy gets out of all his players. So, you know, depending on what he does too, I mean, you know, do you look a little bit harder at spending some money, or do you feel like you can, you know, buy the dented cans and, you know, get your discounts the way that they've kind of been doing for a while with him around and turning these guys into all pro players when that, you know, probably doesn't happen other places?
Yeah, losing Scarnecchia at this point would be devastating to their success. And, I mean, again, I'm going off my gut here. I don't think he retires this offseason. I think he missed it far too much when he stepped away in 2014 and 2015. They got by without him in 2014. But 2015 was, I mean, unquestionably the worst offensive line performance I've ever seen from this Patriots team. That got Dave DeGuglielmo fired. And Scarnecchia at times that season was like, yeah, I think I kind of want to come back. And he was actually still in the building quite frequently those 2 years as sort of like an advisor. And he would meet with the coaches. He would meet with the players. He would help out however he could. He went on scouting trips in the offseason, kind of worked out some guys that they drafted. So he didn't step fully away. So I think I don't think that he's going to retire unless he sits there and says, you know what, I am completely done. I'm going to go live out my days on a beach somewhere, which I would never fault anybody for doing. But it's, you can't, if you lose Scarnecchia and your best left guard in the same offseason, or your best lineman, I should say, in the same offseason, that'd be a really crushing blow. And then, you know, another thing with, this is an unknown, did Isaiah Wynn, was his performance because of the amount of time that he missed, or is it because that we overrated what we thought we were seeing? And he was outstanding in every practice that we've seen this offseason, last training camp and all that stuff. He was really, really good last year as a rookie before he got hurt. And I've heard a lot of good things about him. But what was with the performance? And is that, were they asking too much of him to come in on the fly in the most important time of year? And so, like, I'm not sitting here saying that I think Isaiah Wynn is incapable of being a franchise left tackle, because I think there's just too much there. But it's just an unknown that the Patriots have to consider and give an honest evaluation of going into the offseason.
Yeah, that's fair. You got anything else?
No, I think I'm good. What about you?
That'll do it.
All right. Good Razor Show. Good midweek edition. we'll come at you guys as frequently as we can, or as the storylines demand this off season. And you're probably already following us on Twitter, because as Nick said earlier, and I was just echoing his comments, we're amazing. So when we do record, it won't be all that hard to find these shows. Thanks a lot for listening all season long. Enjoy your off season, and we'll talk to you guys soon.